Hello! I'm very excited to announce that we now have merchandise for Bedtime Stories with R.A. Spratt. You can order t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, notebooks and coffee cups, all with the show's new logo on it. They look super cool, so check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes for the online store, or you can go to my website, raspratt.com, and click on the merchandise banner. So if you have been enjoying the stories, please do consider ordering something to support the show and help me keep kicking this can down the road. Hello and welcome to Bedtime Stories with me, R.A. Spratt. Okay, so we're reading my book, which is called The Pesky Kids 4, Near Extinction, and we're up to chapter 14. But before we jump in, I should recap what happened at the end of the last chapter. Daisy Odin's daughter pretended to sprain her ankle. Now, all the kids are out at the dinosaur park on a school excursion, and so Daisy pretended to sprain her ankle to force Joe to carry her around to look at all 27 of the dinosaurs. Loretta, April, and Finn all thought this was quite funny, and they went off in the opposite direction to leave Joe and Daisy to it as they wander around looking at the dinosaurs. So that's where we're going to pick things up. Chapter 14, It's Better to Be Safe Than to Be Right. Finn, Loretta, and April were standing in front of the Tyrannosaurus Rex statue. It was massive, looming above them on its hind legs. Tyrannosaurus Rexes did not have an upright posture, said Finn. Their bodies were horizontal, like a chicken's. They weren't covered in bird poo either, said April, grumpily. There was a large, dry spatter of bird poo streaked down the side of the dinosaur's face. It made it look like the T-Rex was crying. April didn't even want to look at the dinosaurs. Like so many things, dinosaurs made her angry. You didn't have to be Sigmund Freud to figure out why. Their mother was a dinosaur scientist. Being a dinosaur scientist was the cover for her double life. Having a double life as an international super spy led to her getting captured, and that had left them motherless. So, of course, April hated dinosaurs. To be fair, she had hated dinosaurs even before their mother disappeared. Mum loved dinosaurs so much, April resented them. She was jealous, so April actively hated them to irritate her mother. The most irritating thing was, her mother didn't know that April hated dinosaurs because she was so wrapped up in them herself that she didn't notice. Finn was at the other extreme. He'd always sought their mother's love by learning everything he could about dinosaurs, and Finn had a gift for retaining obscure, tedious facts, so he knew a lot. Now he was desperate to impress Loretta with his expert level of knowledge. This may sound strange, but he was only 13, and he had no idea how else to appeal to a girl's heart. The tail was used as a counterweight so that the main body could pivot on the hind legs, said Finn. They never stood tall like that. Well, what if the Tyrannosaurus wanted to change a light bulb? Asked Loretta. Finn was confused. They didn't have light bulbs 70 million years ago. I was making a joke, said Loretta. You know, how many Tyrannosaurus Rexes does it take to change a light bulb?
But they wouldn't be able to do it, said Finn. Their front arms are too short.
Yes, that's why the joke is funny, said Loretta patiently.
Plus, their heads would smash through the ceiling first if they climbed a ladder high enough to reach, added April.
So then they'd be able to see daylight and they wouldn't need to change it after all, concluded Loretta happily. So the answer is one plus a stepladder.
That doesn't make any sense, said Finn.
Jokes seldom do, said Loretta. Finn decided to revert the conversation to safer ground, correcting people.
The jawline is all wrong too. Fossils of T-Rex jaws show that the jaw-to-head ratio was much bigger to accommodate all 60 teeth. There's no way that statue has 60 teeth.
Yeah, that's because it's a statue, said April, and it's made of fiberglass.
No, that's not what I mean, said Finn. I'll show you.
Please don't, said April. You know you're not impressing Loretta with your unending pedantic facts about dead lizards.
Yes, he is, argued Loretta. I find all the peculiar things boys say endlessly fascinating.
What's that button? Asked April.
There was a control panel built into the leg of the Tyrannosaurus. The panel had a green button in the middle. I think if you press that button, the dinosaur's meant to do something. Loretta looked up at the 12-meter-tall statue. Finn leaned forward to press it. Just as his hand was about to touch the button, April yelled,
Stop! It could be a bomb!
Finn flinched. April burst out laughing.
Scared you. Finn glowered at her, then hit the button anyway. There was a grinding sound of mechanics struggling to move. The neck and head of the T-Rex shuddered for a moment, and a tinny, strangled roar emerged from a voice box deep within the chest of the model.
"Just when you thought it couldn't get any more pathetic," April scoffed.
Finn shook his head.
"Dinosaurs did not roar. Their vocalizations were more likely to be similar to a bird's squawk."
Finn stepped forward so he was directly underneath the Tyrannosaurus's head. He squatted for a second, then leapt up. Finn was not a tall boy, but he had an impressive leap, especially as he was trying to dazzle Loretta. He just managed to grab hold of the dinosaur's bottom jaw, and then, as he was so skinny, it wasn't too hard for him to pull himself up while walking his legs up the T-Rex's neck.
"Let's have a look," said Finn.
He pulled himself forward until his whole head was inside the dinosaur's mouth.
"Just as I suspected, the molars are totally... Ah! Ah!"
The animatronic suddenly lurched into motion. The Tyrannosaurus's head swung to the side and the jaw clamped shut.
"Ah!" screamed Finn.
"Cool," said April. "Ruff, ruff, ruff," barked Pumpkin, jealous to see another creature biting Finn. Loretta leapt forward and pulled open the control panel. There was a red button inside. She hit it and the animatronics came to a laboured halt.
"Are you all right?" April called up to her brother.
"No!" cried Finn. His legs waggled about in the air as he desperately tried to free himself.
"Get me out of here!"
"Well, at least we know he's not a paraplegic," said April, "or he wouldn't be able to wave his legs about like that."
"Help me!" yelled Finn.
"Why?" asked April. "This is the only good thing to happen all day. We've got 3 hours to kill. We should set up a picnic and watch you." Joe was more sympathetic than April. Even though he was 100 metres away looking at a pterodon with Daisy, as soon as he saw Finn's head get clamped in the dinosaur's mouth, Joe dropped Daisy in the dirt and ran over to help his brother. There wasn't much he could do, but he could grab Finn's legs and support him so his body weight wasn't hanging on his neck.
"What's going on?" demanded Mr. Lang as he hurried over too.
"Finn tried to impress Loretta by sticking his head in a dinosaur's mouth," said April. "Then the dinosaur came to life and bit him."
"What?" said Mr. Lang.
"This sort of thing happens to me a lot," explained Loretta. "It's the hormones. Boys feel a biological imperative to try to impress me, because I'm beautiful." She smiled, demonstrating just how devastatingly attractive she could be. Mr. Lang flinched. Her beauty was almost like a shockwave. "It can be distressing for them, but on the bright side, it's never dull for me."
"Get me out of here, please," begged Finn.
He had his hands pressed either side of the dinosaur's jaw and was pushing hard, trying to release himself. His legs were still waving about in the air. Pumpkin could not resist. He jumped up and bit one shoe.
"Ow!" cried Finn.
"Hang in there, Finn," Joe called up to his brother.
"Of course he's going to hang in there," said April. "His head is stuck. He hasn't got any choice." "Ow!" cried Daisy from where Joe had dropped her. "I think I've sprained my other ankle."
"Please," said April. "No one believed you the first time, except for poor, dense Joe. So no one's going to believe you sprained a second ankle."
"Yes," agreed Loretta. "Munchausen syndrome is funny when it doesn't harm anyone, but we've got a real problem to deal with now, so be a dear and cut it out."
Daisy was angry and mortified, but the most humiliating part was clearly no one cared. They were all just staring up at Finn, wondering what to do with him.
"What should we do?" asked Joe. He was used to being able to solve problems with brute strength, but he didn't see how that could help here. He couldn't crash tackle the dinosaur.
"Lubrication," said Loretta.
"What?" asked Mr. Lang.
"So we can slide Finn out," explained Loretta. "Do you have anything slippery we could rub on his head?"
"We could drain motor oil out of the bus," said April.
"No, no one is tampering with the bus," said Mr. Lang. "It's decrepit enough. It barely runs with oil, so it's not going to run without it."
"What about butter?" asked Joe.
"Did you bring a tub of butter?" asked April.
She had to ask because Joe was a hungry boy, so it was not beyond the realm of possibility.
"No, but there's butter in our sandwiches," said Joe.
"You want us to rub our sandwiches on the dinosaur's teeth?" asked Loretta.
Maybe, said Joe.
He was rarely confident enough to give an outright positive answer.
"Oh, it's worth a try," said Mr. Lang.
A short while later, they'd collected up all the sandwiches from all the children. Well, all the children who hadn't already eaten their sandwiches on the bus ride there. But it was no use. Despite smearing the butter on Finn's head and the dinosaur's teeth, they couldn't get him out. And they tried everything. Rotating him sideways, slow jiggling, sudden tugging, 5 or 6 teenagers pulling on each leg. But nothing worked.
Finn was well and truly stuck. It was a thoroughly humiliating experience for him. All his life, people had accused Finn of being a big head. And they didn't just mean he was a know-it-all. He literally had an unusually large skull. And now that fact was his undoing. He could feel people manhandling him as they shook him and tugged on his legs. He didn't even know who was doing it. He just hoped none of them was Loretta. It would be so unfair if Loretta was manhandling him and he didn't even realise. "It's hopeless," said Mr. Lang. Being out in the desert had apparently eroded his professional training to be a positive influence in the lives of children. "Need tools," said Neil. He was not a chatty boy, but it was widely known that he knew how to fix broken stuff. His parents were circus performers, so Neil never got new things. If he wanted something, he always had to fix a broken version to get it.
"Couldn't you pry the dinosaur's jaws open with a plank of wood? You know, using it as a lever," suggested Loretta. "After all, Archimedes did say, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I shall move the world."
"Actually," Finn's muffled voice could be heard from within the dinosaur's head, "Archimedes was Greek, so he would have said, Tose mu ina, moklio arketa, makri kai ina, ipo moklio panosto opio na ton, topo thetiso kaita kiniso ton cosmo."
Even when he's stuck in a giant plastic dinosaur, he still takes time to be annoying and correct people, said April.
"There are no planks of wood," Neil pointed out.
"You mean we're going to have to drive all the way back to Currawong just to get tools?" complained Kieran.
"On the bright side," said April, checking her watch, "at least we get to end the excursion early."
"I was enjoying it," said Kieran. "I learned a lot of facts from the placards."
"All the facts on the placards are wrong,"
Finn's muffled voice came from within the dinosaur's head. "Says you," said Kieran. He was not a great raconteur.
"No, says science," said Finn.
"Yeah, well, I'm not going to listen to a science lesson from a boy whose head is stuck in an oversized plastic dinosaur," said Kieran.
The other students laughed. It was a good burn.
"Not plastic, fiberglass," said Finn.
"There's no difference," said Animesh. "There's a lot of difference," retorted Finn. "Fiberglass is made of fibers of glass. Plastic is a petroleum byproduct, and the replica is not oversized, it's a full-scale model."
"You know, if we all get on the bus and drive away, we won't have to listen to him talking," said April.
"You can't leave me here," panicked Finn.
His head was so sweaty. It was surprisingly hot inside the head of a model dinosaur. He was starting to become delirious.
"I suppose not," said Mr. Lang. Joe had been holding Finn up for quite a while already. It wasn't that easy, particularly as Finn kept wriggling. Joe was getting pins and needles in his shoulder where Finn was standing on him. He let go of Finn's calf for a second to shake out his arm.
"Hey, don't let go," yelped Finn. "My ears will rip off."
"Yeah, but you'd be better looking," said April. "Your ears stick out too much anyway."
"I can stay and hold him up while you go for help," said Joe.
"Are you sure?" said Mr. Lang. "I don't like to leave you alone."
"I'll wait with Joe," said Loretta.
"I suppose that's all right," said Mr. Lang. "You are his sister now."
"Well, what does that make me, chopped liver?" demanded April.
"Do you want to wait here with your brothers while we go for help?" asked Mr. Lang.
"No," said April. "I don't like either of them."
"There you go then," said Mr. Lang. "Miss Viswanathan can stay."
"I'll stay too," offered Daisy.
"No," shouted Joe in horror.
"You said you've got two sprained ankles," April reminded her. "We should be rushing you back to town for immediate medical attention."
"My ankles feel better," said Daisy.
"I wasn't talking about your ankles," said April. "I was talking about your brain. You need to see a psychiatrist if you think anyone believed for a second that you weren't faking the sprained ankles."
"All right," said Mr. Lang, checking his watch. "It'll take us 2 hours to get back to town, half an hour at least to arrange help, then another 2 hours for whoever that is to drive back here. Will you be okay?"
Joe looked about. He was going to have to spend 4.5 hours holding his little brother up by his waist while being kept company by the most disturbingly attractive and sociopathic girl he had ever met. He would have dearly loved to have run away screaming, but he couldn't do that to Finn. He didn't want to spend the rest of his life feeling guilty that his brother had no ears.
"Yeah, fine," lied Joe.
"I'll attend to all his needs," said Loretta. Joe prayed he could wait 4.5 hours without going to the bathroom. Okay, that's the end of the chapter, so let's go straight into the next one. Chapter 15, Exit This Way. Most of the kids were relieved to get back on the bus. Four-year-olds may find dinosaurs enthralling, but teenagers do not. Admittedly, teenagers don't find anything enthralling, except themselves, and the typical adolescent mating rituals that girls spend so much time giggling over.
Life-sized fiberglass dinosaurs were never going to be their idea of a fun day out. There was much more scope for social anthropology on the bus ride. April slumped down on a seat close to the front. Pumpkin jumped up on her lap. All the other kids hurried past her towards the back of the bus. No one wanted to get stuck sitting next to April. She was bad enough in a classroom setting, but at least if she exploded at school, April could storm off and take her anger out somewhere else. Inside a bus, there was nowhere for her anger to go. The bus was like a pressure cooker. April's rage would build and build until it exploded, and there'd be no escaping for the rest of them. That's why everyone wanted the back seat. The further they could get from ground zero, the better. Only one student had no idea who he sat next to when he plopped down, and that was Tom, the only vision-impaired student at Currawong High. Although he did make up for his lack of sight by being extremely good at hearing, smelling, and making sarcastic comments. So perhaps he intentionally sat next to April. Who knows the complicated, or rather breathtakingly simplistic, workings of an adolescent boy's mind. Either way, Neil was crushed when he clambered onto the bus last, only to see the love of his life sitting next to the annoying, lanky, blind kid. Neil glowered. Unfortunately, his face was so inexpressive, there was no visible difference to an outside viewer, so no one noticed. Especially not Tom, being vision impaired. Neil would have dearly liked to kick Tom in the foot as he walked past, but his grandmother, the cat lady, had brought him up to behave like a gentleman. An inarticulate, emotionally stunted gentleman, but a gentleman nonetheless. So, unlike April, he couldn't bring himself to kick a blind boy. April was on some level worried about Finn, and even Joe. It's not every day your brother gets his head stuck in a dinosaur and you have to leave him and your other brother behind in the desert. But April was so emotionally crippled that there was no way she could identify what her agitated emotions meant. She certainly couldn't deal with them appropriately. Her brain was like an internal combustion engine. An engine takes petrol and converts it into momentum. Her brain took all emotions and converted them into rage. She looked quiet and calm as she stared truculently out the bus window, but if anyone had been brave enough to come closer and observe her, they would have seen she was quivering. She may have started off quivering out of anxiety for her brothers, but that emotion was quickly converting to fear of abandonment. She had a deep well of that inside her ever since her mother had disappeared. The quivering was actually a dam wall of fear that was strained to capacity and about to burst as a tsunami of rage. So this was a terrible time to try and make small talk with April. Being vision impaired, Tom had no chance of picking up any of these warning signs. He had no way of knowing that just sitting down next to April was an incredibly foolhardy thing to do. It was equivalent to poking an angry bull in the butt with a barbecue fork, then waving a red rag in its face. April turned and glared at Tom, and since that didn't have any effect, she snapped rudely at him. "You're taking up too much space!" "I can't control the volume of space I fill," said Tom. "What do you want me to do, shrink?" "Yes, yes I do," said April. "I want you to take up less space. It's what considerate people do. You can't use being vision impaired as an excuse for being endlessly rude." "You are accusing me of being rude," asked Tom. "Well, that's the pot calling the kettle black."
"You can't say that, it's racist," said Matilda, butting in. She was sitting across the aisle next to Neil. She loved telling people when they were wrong. She particularly loved telling teachers when other people were wrong. She was a proud and devoted tattletale.
"What's racist?" asked Tom.
"Calling people black," said Matilda.
"I didn't call anyone black," said Tom. "I said the pot calling the kettle black. It's an expression."
"It's a racist expression," said Matilda.
"What's he supposed to say?" asked April. "The pot of African heritage."
"He shouldn't talk about it at all," said Matilda, "because he's not black."
"He doesn't know that. He can't see."
"I have no concept of colour," agreed Tom. "It's a theoretical idea that has no meaning to me."
"Anyway, we're getting off the point," said April. "I'm sure Tom is a raging racist, but that's no excuse for him manspreading."
"What?" asked Tom.
"You're manspreading," said April. "It's a phenomena that's been widely documented on the internet. It happens on all forms of public transport. Men selfishly take up more space than they need by having their legs spread apart, while women are forced to squeeze into tiny spaces. The fact that no one notices until it's pointed out just shows how deeply ingrained the patriarchy is and how we unconsciously think men deserve to take up more space."
"The only reason I haven't noticed is because I'm blind," protested Tom.
"Vision impaired," corrected April, "although I'm prepared to agree that you are blind to the suffering of others."
"Why didn't you just ask me to put my legs together?" asked Tom.
"I shouldn't have to," said April.
The engine of the bus sputtered a few times, then roared to life. Right, we're off, yelled Mr. Lang over the sound of the engine. He ground the gear stick until he found first gear and the bus shuddered forward.
I've got no idea how long your legs are, said Tom, but if they don't take up as much space as mine, that's your problem.
He didn't move his legs a millimetre. They were still spread exactly as they were when he first sat down. If anything, he'd fractionally moved them apart.
It's not the length of legs that's the problem. It's the space in between your legs that you imagine it is vital for you to monopolise that offends me, said April.
You want the space between his legs? Asked Matilda. She was finding it hard to follow the conversation.
No, yelled April. I want him to stop manspreading. You two stop fighting, snapped Mr. Lang.
He glanced over his shoulder at them. He was struggling to get the shuddery bus into second gear. You're being ridiculous, said Tom.
I am not, yelled April.
She picked up her backpack, swung it round, and whacked Tom hard on the knee.
Hey, cried Tom.
Now, being vision impaired, Tom was eligible for many supportive government programs to help him cope as a fully independent member of society. Unfortunately for April, one of the courses Tom had taken and excelled in was self-defense for the vision impaired. So when she whacked him with her school bag, a common schoolyard tactic, usually not signifying much, sometimes even used as a gesture of greeting or affection, Tom reacted reflexively as a result of his training. He picked up the nearest weapon to hand, his white cane, and swung it at her. This may have been effective out on the street, but inside a crowded bus, waving a 1.5 metre cane about is never going to go well. The cane whipped through the air, hit a handrail, bounced off, and smacked Mr. Lang across the face.
Ah! Cried Mr. Lang,
grabbing his eyes and letting go of the steering wheel. The bus veered off the road and down an embankment. Now everyone was screaming.
Ah!
The bus started to tip up on one side as it rolled down the slope out of control. Everyone sitting on the right-hand side of the bus slid or fell into the people sitting along the window on the left. Tom slammed into April's outstretched arms. Then Matilda crunched into Tom, and Neil slammed into Matilda. Tom was terrified. He had no idea what was happening, although he did have a faint inkling of understanding that he had probably caused it. April grabbed him in a bear hug. Crunch! The bus had crashed into something and mercifully straightened back up. April turned and looked out the window to see what they'd crashed into. It was the Tyrannosaurus Rex, the one that Finn's head was stuck in. The bus had slammed into it, and the huge dinosaur had collapsed on top of the bus.
Finn! Cried April.
And on that cliffhanger, we will end for this week. Thank you for listening. Before I go, I did just have one announcement. I've got a book launch for my new book, Hamlet Is Not Okay. It's coming up on July 9th, which is a bit of a way away, but I have put tickets on sale. They went on sale yesterday, and all my events have been selling out pretty quickly. So if you were interested in coming to the book launch for Hamlet Is Not Okay, it's going to be held in Sydney at the Rebel Theatre, which is down by one of the wharfs there where, in the theatre area there. Then please do go online and book yourself a ticket. The tickets are available at eventbrite.com. You can go to my website or my social media if you want to try and find a link. But if you just Google eventbrite.com and then search R.A. Spratt or Hamlet Is Not Okay, you'll find it. All right. So that's it for now. Until next time, goodbye.